Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of the Proper Class Podcast. I'm Laura Checkley.
And I'm Hannah Chiswick.
And we are, of course, here to celebrate all things working class, because if we don't, who the bloody hell will?
As always, we sit down with a working class hero to celebrate their life and achievements and discuss just how they got to where they are today. So without further ado, who are we celebrating this week, Laura?
Let me tell you, I've been a huge fan and it's going to be a bloody giggle this week. I can just feel it in my waters. And that's not because I've currently got a plumber in fixing my lav.
Have you actually?
Yeah, I have actually.
Did you block it again?
Oh, how rude. Yeah, I did actually. No jokes. No, basically, I had my parents over at the weekend and the toilet is basically, this is really boring for the listener, but you've asked, so I'm going to give it to you. The toilet's just been running constantly for about a year. And so my stepdad said, oh, I'll have a look at that. And he's usually really good with stuff like that. And he basically just broke it and it's now royally buggered and just full of my bum biscuits. So there we go.
Do you know what? I don't think I've ever regretted asking a question so much in my entire life.
Remind me to tell you.
Should we just get on with introducing this week's guest? Thank you.
Yeah, but I quite like bum biscuits. I'm going to use that one again.
No. No.
Okay, this week's multi-talented guest is a presenter, writer, actor and comedian. You may have spied them on the telly box in shows such as Would I Lie to You, Between the Covers, Strictly It Takes Two, Roast Battles, Love Island After Sun, Richmond Osmond's House of Cards, Celebrity Mastermind and is a regular face on Celebability. Actually, Han, on that, what would be your specialist subject on Mastermind?
Oh my God, what would be my specialist?
Mama Be Spice Girls.
Oh, Spice Girls is good.
Yeah,
I think mine might be sweets.
What, like Haribo kind of sweets?
Yeah, sweets, different types of sweets and what they used to be called.
Oh,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, I think Spice Girls is better.
Yeah, I would choose Spice Girls. This week's guest has been killing it on the comedy circuit for years now, supporting all the biggest names in comedy, including Catherine Ryan, Jason Manford, John Bishop, and that's just to name a few. In 2019, after performing live at the Comedy Store on Comedy Central, this week's guest was commissioned to record their own 30-minute comedy special.
Over lockdown, this week's guest kept the nation laughing by creating, writing and starring in their very own mini-series, Comedians in Quarantine. And they even found the energy to create their own true crime podcast with their lawyer boyfriend called Order in the Bedroom. Ooh, ah.
This week's guest is such a nan. This week's guest is no stranger to presenting too on TV shows such as Celebs on the Ranch, Date or Drop and I can't say it. Say it for me, Laura.
Takeshi's Castle.
Well done. Most recently, though, never say it. Most recently, though, they recorded for the BBC's new stand-up show, Live from Barry Island, and their debut BBC Radio 4 stand-up special.
But of all his achievements, I'm sure he'd say the proudest one of all has to be being named one of Attitude's top 100 bachelors. Folks, please give a very warm, proper class podcast welcome to our black belt in Taekwondo, don't you know? It's the hilarious and multi-talented Stephen Bailey.
Ladies, I sound so much better than I actually am. Just from that intro, I'm going to ring you every morning and that's how I want to start my day.
Are you sure? That took us ages.
I mean, it did take you ages.
No, but honestly, we had to leave out so much because, I mean, you're non-stop. Do you ever stop?
No, because I'm scared of being poor again.
Right.
Yeah, right.
I'm not even joking. That is, my boyfriend's always like, do you maybe want to spend time together? And I was like, pack a case. You're coming to Coventry. Like, I always get the fear because of how, you know, we grew up poor. Then when you start doing stand-up, you're poor. And even when I started doing stand-up, I had a full-time job. And I was still bloody poor.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. Honestly, we always say that our guests have been, like, so eclectic, like, from sports people, comedians, writers, you know, across the board, very different lives. But the one thing that everyone talks about is that massive fear of just losing financial security, of just...
Yeah.
That terror, like, I think if you've ever not had money, like, and really not had it, not in a middle class way where you can't go skiing, like in a proper life.
I always say this. I have friends that are like, oh my God, I'm skint this month, but they've still got 30 grand in their savings account. And I'm
like, they've had to dip into their savings.
Yeah. When I'm skint, it's like minus five.
Yeah, can't get on the bus, babe. Can't get on the bus.
Yeah, I'm like, what is a saving and how do I get one of those?
That's like my life ambition, to have savings.
Oh,
to have a savings account. Hello?
I just can't. I'd love that. Even. I always found it as well, like when I first moved to London, like people really, I don't think people understand what working class is anymore. I think there's working class and I think there's regional and I think people confuse, like I think because I'm Northern, people think that all Northerners are poor. And then it's like, no, there's a little place called Cheshire. They have money there.
Yeah.
I remember when I moved to London to start comedy and there was all these comedians that didn't have jobs and I was running from a 12-hour shift and everyone was like, what do you do in the day? And they're just like fannying around. And then it turns out their parents pay their rent, but they've got like, you know, they've got a regional accent. So they're like, I'm working class, babes. And it's like, you're not working class. You're from Bristol.
Because you're not working.
Yeah.
I remember like, because I used to do sketch comedy. I remember running with my mate. We'd been teaching kids all day. Fuck knows. Can't remember what we were teaching. But we were quite proppy with our sketches. So we had an easel. We had our bag of wigs. We're running down this hill in fucking, I don't know, in Surrey somewhere, trying to get this train on time to get to a gig on time. And I remember... we got on the train, we're like, you know, and you can taste blood. And my comedy partner looked at me and went, when are we ever going to stop running in life?
Oh, my God.
And it's always stuck with me that.
Yeah.
No.
That is
never.
So depressing. Because I'm always like, it never gets easier. I honestly thought when I first got my TV show, I thought, this is it. I'm off.
Yeah.
I'm off. Life sorted. And then it's like you've never done anything. After every show, boom, never done anything.
Three rungs up, four down, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's all about like who you know, who you're hanging out with, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know anyone and I don't have time to hang out with anyone. I'm always in the goddamn Toyota going somewhere.
So, Steve, we start each week asking our guest to take us back to somewhere that reminds them of their working class roots. So if you could take us anywhere today, where would that be?
Do you know, I was thinking I have so many different answers for this.
Yeah.
Like, because obviously there's always mum and dad's house because that's like as working class. Do you remember, I don't know if you guys did this, we had a thing called Kirby. Do you know this? It was like just...
Throwing the ball at the curb.
But that is poor people shit.
Yeah, like, I fucking loved curbs.
Yeah.
We called it curbs, yeah.
Curbs.
Did you do it, Han?
We had a different one, which was that you put a tennis ball, basically, in the bottom of an old tight, and then you would do this thing with it.
Oh my God, we did that with tangerines.
You know what I mean?
What the fuck? What's the point of that game? You're just hitting your back, aren't you?
No, it was like...
But we did it, so you put it in, so you tied the tights around your waist, and then you had a tangerine, so it looked like you had, like, a droopy dick. And then you'd swing that tangerine into another tangerine. It was like poor people croquet.
Oh, okay. I was going to say a bit like conkers. Yeah. But yeah, now let's go with poor people croquet.
And then, I can't wait to listen to that back because that's going to be really good material. Keep it in. And then, well, the other thing is, I always think about there, like going to Beavers. I always think that's quite working class. But for me, the one I've settled on is my local pub, the Windmill. Because I remember when, we were 18 and we were all still poor. So we just went there and we'd go there, like, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I thought, this is going to be my life forever. And if it is, I'm all right with it.
Yeah. Why there? What was the...
It was like £6 for a bottle of Blossom Hill and £3.99 for a Carvery. Like, yeah. Come on.
Yeah, whole round would cost a tenner.
Don't
yeah.
get that in London. Can't even get a Voddy Diet Coke in London for a bloody tenner anymore.
And so is the windmill still going? Is it still about?
Still there, yeah. Do you know what it was? Was it was that place where it was like, you'd either just go there for the night and it's, you know, I'm from a little estate in Manchester, so everyone went there. So it was like everyone you went to school with. Right. And
yeah, yeah.
It was the safest place on the planet.
Yeah.
And then... as we got a bit older and our student loans kicked in,
sure,
we'd go there first. So it's where you'd start the night out.
Oh my God, I love
and
it.
And then it's where you'd go for your hangover on a Sunday.
Yeah. Does it just really sort of encapsulate that time in your life where
yes.
you felt really connected to your roots and your all of that, you know?
Do you know what? I would honestly say it's the happiest time of my life, which I know sounds, well, it doesn't sound ridiculous. It was just like everyone we grew up with, you know, I had a part-time job at a supermarket. I worked there for 6 years, like through college, uni, yeah. and then I did yeah. a full-time year after I finished. And all the friends I made there. And because everyone lived on that estate, and it really was like the heart of it. So I think sometimes, you know, when you watch like EastEnders and Coronation Street, I think a lot of people maybe from a middle-class background think, people aren't always going to the Rovers. And it's like,
yeah,
no, they yeah. do, because where else?
Yeah.
We're not getting taxis places all the time. We don't have the money. And obviously it's like, sometimes we did. But that place, you could always go. There was always people that had your back. Like I say, it felt safe. You knew there was yeah. never going to be any trouble. It was just nice. I always say to my friends, I wish we could go back to that time. And actually, so me and my friends, when we were at uni... and my friends I've had forever. They're the same friends I've had from school to when I worked
That's
at good. Sainsbury's.
That's nice.
All from, and they still are. So when we were at uni, there was a band called The Feeling. I don't
sure,
know.
Sure, I remember them, right. of course.
I love
of
it
course.
When you call it. I love it. Clearance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, and it's so funny because I almost come in like full circle. So I used to fancy Dan. I mean, say used to, still do.
Yeah,
I do. Fancy Dan from The Feeling, and we'd look back when their song came on, that was us heading to the dance floor. They had a song called Rosé. We'd listen to it getting ready in the bedroom with a bottle
Drinking
of Blossom
Rose,
Hill Rosé.
Yeah.
yeah. And they're touring again, and I met Dan at an awards do. So I ran up to him and was like, hi, minor celebrity myself nowadays, loved you at uni. My girls are going to need a message. So I got him doing a message for each of them. Now say Sarah. Now say Natalie. Now say this. And he did it, such good sport. And so we're going to go and see him at the Ritz in Manchester in a couple of weeks with The Feeling.
Amazing.
And we're going to go to the windmill and have a bottle of rosé. So we're going to relive
oh,
it. Yeah.
That. Oh, I God. Love that. So take us back. Tell us about school, Stephen. So how was that? Where did you go? How was school for you?
Well, I have to put allegedly around this story because it is one of the it's one of those like, oh, what's it called, like the folk tales of the
sure.
area. Right. And but our school got set on fire so many times, they ended up just knocking down two of the local schools and rebuilding one. So that kind of summarizes where I'm from. Yes, yeah, school was fine. And I always say about this is that I didn't experience homophobia until I left Manchester, which is bonkers.
No,
so
wow.
I thought homophobia was in the history books till I was 24. I thought it was like Stonewall, the AIDS crisis. I didn't realise
oh, wow.
because I was so protected by that community. So don't get me wrong. Like sometimes they didn't use language correctly. Like they'd be like,
no.
that's well gay or that. Da, da. But I think yeah. that was more as a sign of the time, actually.
Mm,
I don't think that was...
but never at you or about you or like, no.
No, and I was always very accepted as me. Like, I always say, I always think there is a show or a Radio 4 show or something like that in the fact that I've never come out.
Right.
Because I've never had to. No one's ever, like...
So you didn't discuss it with your parents. It just was sort of organically, like,
yeah, it was
I
just
brought a boyfriend home.
Exactly that. Exactly
right.
that. I got my first boyfriend... And I just brought him home, and that was that.
And yeah. you weren't nervous about it? There was never occurred to you, like, oh, what if they...
Well, everyone just always accepted me as me, that it never
yeah, right.
occurred to me. Even when I... So I did have a girlfriend for about 4 weeks in high school. And, you know, we had a snog. And I was more like, I'm surprised I'm getting away with this. Like, I was more nervous about being like, I've got a girlfriend, because I thought, who the fuck am I trying to kid? Even yeah. she knew. And the minute I knew she knew was when she bought me the duvet set of the TV show Charmed. You ain't getting that for a straight boy.
Oh, she sounds like a keeper.
Wow.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I think there's always an assumption growing up working class that we would be more ignorant and that our folks would be really homophobic. And I think there is a false kind of narrative that we, the working class, are just super ignorant and that it would be a really hard thing to... I'm not saying it's the case for everyone, but that it would be really difficult to grow up queer in a working class environment. And actually... the same as any environment. Back when, I mean, obviously when I was gay, it was, and I was coming out, and that was 20 odd years ago, and I was coming out, it was more to do with just actually life back then and how it was, and not seeing anyone that was gay. But even if you grew up in a middle class environment, being gay back when I was coming out, it would have been the same. There weren't any gay people on telly, not really. Certainly weren't any lesbians anyway, that was for sure. But I do think there's a perception, don't you, with working class people, oh, everyone likes football, it's with hooligans, and oh, you probably all voted out. And, you know, I do. Do you think that, or am I being... I
do think that, because it's the one thing that I always try and fight for and champion is being like, you know, my mum and dad, they say it themselves, they've got one O-level between them. And I was like, well, technically you're uneducated because O-levels don't exist.
I know, my mum always goes on about O-levels.
But I think they've got more heart. And I think that's the thing with working class people is like, they've got heart. Like, we grew up really poor. And I always say, you know, the thing is, though, is I didn't realise it until later. I mean, I say later in life, like I'm nearly dead, like in my 30s, that it was, you know, actually, I think we were rich all along, because you couldn't buy the love that we had, the laughter that we had. I really think it's how I've ended up being a comedian, is because we really laughed a lot in the house, even when it was like, we all get the vibe, this isn't great right now. Like, there was a lot of laughter. And I think it is the thing that teaches you, which is good for the industry I'm in, tenacity and resilience. And there's always going to be someone that thinks you're thick. And there's always going to be... But no one ever made me feel bad about my sexuality until I moved to London, which I find
That's
fascinating.
So interesting.
Like, because in London, you go... there are just natural homophobes in the street, like holding hands with your partner. Then you have the thing of going like, there's ingrained homophobia, which people don't like to talk about, but it is true, which is like when sometimes I've not been booked for a gig and the actual response has been, because we have Tom Allen booked.
Wow.
So that says, you're not booking me because you booked another gay man. Yeah. And that also says, you think we're all the same.
Isn't it? Do you think, similarly to like not realizing there was homophobia, did you realize you were poor?
Yeah, I did know that, but only because it's like, but I think it was good. Like, I wouldn't change my life, because to change my life, I'd have to change my family, and I wouldn't change that for the world. Mm. I know this is a bit dark, but I'm always like, I hope I die first, because I can't bear that. But so I did know I was poor, but I think it was the thing that, you know, I know a lot of lazy people, and it's like, and people go like, especially in my industry, people are always like, you're everywhere, you're doing this, you're on that gig, you're on that gig. And it's like, yeah, because I've got a rocket up my ass, because I always have to have one. Yeah. Where it's like, they did. So I'm not where I am. I've not done any of the shows by accident. Like, if my agent rings and he's like, oh, this person's not sure about you. And I'm like, well, who's their boss? Because everyone's always got a boss. Who's this? Who's that? Da-da-da. Like, you've got to fight your way to the top, because social mobility is not things the people in charge want us to have. So we have to change that ourselves.
Yeah.
And I've had it before where it's like, I've not got jobs because of you're not friends with a certain person. And it's like, but they're friends from Cambridge, or they're friends from another posh university, Durham. They're all these white boys on Dave. They're all from Durham.
Yeah.
University. And so it's like, of course I'm not friends with them. They're all straight, so they have no interest in hearing who I've been blowing at the weekend. And you know, they're all, they all went to uni together and have that bond. And it's like, and I'm going home to hang out with the girls that I worked at Sainsbury's with. And so then it's like, so you're not, I'm not getting booked or not booked due to talent. But what I will say is, growing up poor, it made me a dreamer.
Yeah.
And it made me watch the Hilary Duff films and the Lindsay Lohan films and Disney and be like, you know, when you wish upon a star, dreams can come true.
Yeah. Oh, God, I get that dreaming thing. I think any kid with a dream anyway, but it always felt like it was a dream that might not happen. I really wanted it to. Like, I really wanted it to. But I remember that. I remember I used to do interviews of myself in the mirror as well. Like,
I used to do a radio show with my cousin and it was like Radio Rue 92. And I was like, I have no idea why we called it that at all. We had a theme tune like Radio Rue 92.
Yeah.
You get it. And I was like, I have no idea where that came from. But
I was always on a version of Parky, you see.
Yeah. I tell you though, I never knew. I didn't think it wouldn't happen until, again, similarly with the sexuality thing, I didn't know classism was an issue until I left bloody Manchester.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question to you. Was that when you really became aware of your class getting to London?
Yeah, because like I said, it was like, you know, I remember there was a point, like, I'd only done about 3 gigs at the time and everyone was talking about, like, the hardest working comedians. And I was thinking, but I could do 4 gigs in a night if I didn't have a day job.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
or if my parents were paying my rent or if this or that. And I think I took it really, but I had an episode of depression a few years ago. And I think it was because of the buildup of all these things about sexuality. You know, I'd experienced homophobia, like people shouting at me and my boyfriend in the street, and I'd never had it before. Then the classism and the struggle there and being like, oh, I'm not just on my time. I'm judged if I can afford to go and do something like the Edinburgh Fringe. Yeah. And because I think it just whacked me and pushed me into this depressive state because I'd never known of it. And I was like, oh, I thought London was almost like our version of the American dream.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you said at the start, you know, you read out all the credits that I've done and all the people I've supported and the stand-up I do and the shows I sell out. And I could not get on a topical comedy show for love nor money. And the reason that kept getting feedback was going, but you're not topical, you don't do this. And you're going, but neither's X, Y, and Z. I don't want to name people because it's not their fault, but it's like neither these middle-class counterparts, but they're given a shot to at least prove whether they can do it or not. You're not giving me the shot. And actually, I've got a different take on it because of where I'm from. I've got different opinions on it. And I've also got a different take on it because of my preferences. Like, you know, I love everything pop culture, Real Housewives, Kardashians. So I said, so I can come at it from a really different angle and compare it to different things that they're comparing it to.
And speak to the everyman, perhaps, as well.
Well, they don't want to speak to the everyman. I think that's the issue. But yeah, I had to sit down and have that argument because also it's like, agents can't have that argument because they don't get it. So you're sat having this extra workload to make that.
God, I think
that's the thing, though, because the things you're supposed to be when you're working class, isn't it? And funnily enough, funny is one of them. You are allowed to be funny if you're working class, but in a very palatable, particular kind of way. If you even, because you're not supposed to like the Kardashians and have an opinion on the government. You're not supposed to be able to go like, oh, I absolutely love Love Island, but I also think Hamlet's an amazing play.
I think this is the media's fault, though, because people need to go, you're this one, and we can only be one thing. Those of us that have lived a life know that's not true.
Of course.
But the media can't handle it. The media can't handle people with depth and nuance and being like, well, I can love the Kardashians, but I've also lived through the same global crises that everyone else has lived through. So and I've got some thoughts on Matt Hancock right now. Do you know?
Yeah. It's why we never have any sort of regional accents reading the news, because else we'd get used to it. And then suddenly everyone would have a place, wouldn't they, probably?
And it's like, I'm lactose intolerant, but I still have some milk in for visitors. Do you know what I mean? Like.
So listen, take us back. So you're at school, it's all going well.
You shouldn't start me off about class, by the way.
Listen, you're in good company, babe.
Oh,
you're in good company.
Oh, my God, I'll be here all bloody night.
I know, let's do it. Were people saying to you at school, oh, you're funny, you're really fucking funny?
No, I was really shy at school.
Really?
Yeah, I am shy, actually. Like, not even at school, I am shy. Obviously, I can get on stage now and I've learnt to handle it. But no, I was really shy.
And so when did that change? You went to uni. What were you studying at uni?
French.
Oh,
were you? Wow.
Yeah.
And do you still keep that up? Can you speak French?
No, I kind of lost it because I graduated in 2009, then did a year working at Sainsbury's and then moved to London. Because even that, I was like, I couldn't move to London till I had a deposit for a flat. So I had to work for a year to get that deposit because no one was able to give it me. Anyway, I don't mind doing that. I have a good work ethic. But I did it and then I kind of lost it. But now we try and go to France once a year.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So what was the turning point then?
I think it was like the year I was going to graduate. I was like, everyone else wanted to be like, was going to be like, I'm going to be a French teacher. Maybe they're going to be a translator. So other people were going on to some sort of master's or PGC, further education. And that wasn't what I want to do. And I've always been drawn to Razzle Dazzle. I used to love Holly Willoughby when she was doing The Extra Factor. And I was like, I want to be Holly Willoughby. That is literally how it started. I want to be Holly Willoughby. And it really irks me because I've met a lot of celebrity and I've not met goddamn Holly Willoughby.
Well, we need to sort that out,
well,
surely.
Yeah, we do. Maybe I need to find a cue. And
you won't find her in it.
No, but I'll just go, Holly, can I come with you? Can't be asked. I need a wee. I really love Holly. So I researched people like Holly, Dermot O'Leary, and people were either started as runners in TV, receptionists in TV, or models. And I was like, well, I can't do that one, but I could do the other ones. And then I was like, well, how do I do this? So I was just Googling like TV producers. And also the internet wasn't what it is now. So it wasn't as simple as that. I was really like...
No. Taking some time.
I mean,
yeah.
Gone for a bottle of rosé, come back. And I found out there was this guy who had gone to Manchester Metropolitan University where I had been, and he was now the head of Channel 5. And he was doing a speech at Manchester Metropolitan University. So I found out his name and I emailed him with tenacity. I just wrote... His first name, dot, his surname, at channel5.co.uk and hope it worked. And it did. And then I did that for everyone. I was like, well, who's the head of Sky? Could you imagine emailing the head of BBC One now? They would be fucking... Your agent would get a phone call being like, can Stephen...
Babes, yeah, I can do that for you.
Okay, let's not do that. And so I emailed them and I said to him, I said, I've just watched your speech today. I am from a council estate in Manchester today. I've always loved TV. I want to get into it. I've just finished my degree in French today. I don't even know where to begin. And he wrote me back. And that was the first step. If he hadn't written back, I might still be at Sainsbury's or doing something else. Because he wrote back. Then his PA rang me when I was at my internship. She was like, oh, can you come to London? And I was like, those train prices, absolutely not. But they liked that I was a bit sassy. So they paid for me to come.
Oh.
And then we had a chat. And I was like, you know, I really want to be a presenter. Da, 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 da. And he was like, well, what shows do you like on Channel 5? Well, I was like, at that time, I did not watch Channel 5.
No,
I was young.
Did, babes.
No. So I was like, I just pulled out of the hat. I went, oh, I love the Wright stuff. And I started waffling on about Matthew Wright. So I go away and he was like, okay, let's figure this out. Da, da, da. I think you're great. I think you just need a chance to do it. It was like meeting Simon Cowell. Then I went back to Manchester. Didn't think anything of it. Da, da, da. Get a phone call for an interview as a runner on the Wright stuff. So went and did that. Then they came back and they get rammed me and went, listen, everyone here loved you. We'd like to offer you a 6 weeks contract. And I said, I'm not moving to London for a 6 week contract.
No.
We'll give you a year contract. All right.
Oh, see, wow. Good for you.
When can you start? Monday. All right. And that was it.
Wow.
So that was how I got to London. Still at this point, no interest in comedy.
Because a lot of running jobs usually, I mean, back in the day, you'd have to do it for free. Spoken to many a producer about this where, you know, often runners become producers, don't they? So they always say, be nice to your runners, they'll be your producer one day. Can probably see Michelle nodding now. But I know that, like, back in the day, if you were working class and sort of wanted to get into telly in any way, certainly that side of things, you had to work for free as a runner. And, like, that's... It's sort of like, who can do that?
Well, I think that's why there's not a lot of working class people in it, because that's just not possible.
Yeah. Or they get a really low salary and you think, well, no one can survive on that.
That's what happened to me. I really struggled for the first year.
So did you
have
to have another job alongside that running job then, or did you?
No, I just was very, very, very stringent. And then after about 6-7 months, I knew I was well liked. The talent liked me, the producers liked me. So I cried and I got a promotion.
And what were you promoted to?
Production secretary of Channel 5's The Wright Stuff.
Oh, amazing.
Oh my God, wow. And so comedy still wasn't even in your psyche at this point. It was just like, no.
So how does it, what happened? Where does the comedy come from? What was the...
I really got into it. And so I moved to London, really got into running. And have you guys ever done running or anything like that?
I haven't.
No. Only for the bus, babe.
So it's really long hours. Like,
yeah.
So there was not time to do anything around it. And, you know, and obviously I'd just moved to London. So I wanted to socialise and make friends and do things like that. So I just,
don't work in production if you want to socialise.
Yeah,
I mean,
so
poor buggers.
I did it, but I did it for a year. And obviously, when I first moved, it was 2010. So I was like 22, I think. So I had the energy. It's like I could absolutely go out till 1 and be at the Wright Stuff for 6:30. Like, I could.
My God,
I couldn't
that
do
makes
it now.
Me feel sick now.
Yeah. And like I say, I had this first year where I was just working. And then... So in the same building was, do you remember that show T4?
Yeah. That's where Vernon Kay and all that lot started.
Yeah. So yeah, they were looking for a new presenter. So someone in the office went, you should screen test for it. Like, you'd be great. And I was like, I've worked with Steve Jones and I really enjoyed every moment of it. But I was like, I don't look like Steve Jones. But anyway, I went and did this like casting. And they were like, you're really funny, but you're not looking at the camera, you're looking at us. And I was like, oh, is that a problem? But I'd never done anything performer-wise, so I didn't know. But they were like, you should think about doing stand-up. And my response was, you should think about doing stand-up. I'm not doing stand-up. So they're cracking up that I'm having a tantrum over them thinking me doing stand-up. And then And then I kind of sat on it for a bit, percolated on it. And then I was in a meeting and I was saying to Matthew Wright, I was like, oh, I've moved here to be a presenter, really. I wanted to be a presenter. I wanted to get discovered outside M&S like Rachel Stevens. Like,
did she get discovered outside M&S?
That's what she said on a YouTube interview I watched.
That must be true.
Let's say allegedly, to cover all our behinds.
Yeah, sure.
And then I got my job as the production secretary and the right stuff, which meant Saturday and Sundays definitely off. So then I was like, okay. So I just was like researching like stand-up comedy, da-da-da. And then I found this, it was like a writing course, like at City Academy on a Saturday morning. So I signed up for that. And at the end of it, did a gig. That went well. And then I was not one of those people, like some comedians, like I've got to do 100 in my first year. I wasn't like that. I did about 10 in my first year.
Yeah.
And that's how it started.
Wow. And so when did you think, well, this could be a thing?
Not for ages. I really did it. I would say my first 2 years, I really did it as a hobby. So I wasn't emailing people for gigs. If someone saw me and was like, oh, would you like to do my gig? I'd be like, yeah. And I'd put it in my diary then and there. So for the first 2 years, I kind of like plodded around. That's 2011, 2012. And I was really enjoying my job in production because I was like,
right,
I love being on set. I love the razzle dazzle. And what I like about production is going, once you finish filming, there is a bit more quiet a time when everyone's in the edit and you're doing paperwork and stuff like that. So I felt like I had a good balance of insane busyness and that. But then what happened was I worked on a couple of like hidden camera shows. And so they started casting new comedians. So I saw my friends getting invited in for castings, but they wouldn't see me because I was working on the show.
Right.
And then I was like, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Here comes that tenacity.
And I was like, I don't like this. I don't like it. And anyway, and like you say, always be nice to everyone you meet. And, da, da, da. And then what happened was my friend was working on Loose Women. The warm-up guy dropped out and like was sick. And she was like, you're not in ITV Towers, are you? And I was like, I absolutely am. And she's like, don't fancy doing warm-up on your lunch break, do you? And I was like, do I get paid? She was like, yeah. And she told me the fee. And I was like, what? I have to work all week to get that. So I came down and did it. And then because of the fee, I wouldn't even say because of the artistic integrity, because of the fee, I was like, I need to get my shit together and I need to be a comedian. Like, so then that's when I was like, that's when the hunger kicked in for me. And I was like, I don't want it to be a hobby. I want it to be a job. So then that's when I was like, I gigged every night. It didn't matter how tired I was. Gig, 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 gig. And then...
And presumably you were enjoying it, right?
Yeah, I loved it.
But
I think I enjoyed it because I didn't take it seriously in the beginning. I was like, it's like a hobby.
Yeah.
It was like when I did like Taekwondo, it was just like a hobby on the side. But I quite liked the people that did it. So I'd have a drink or a slice of pizza and da-da-da. And then it got to a point where in 2016, TV's and Nation's sweetheart, Catherine Ryan, asked me if I wanted to open for her on, I think it was her first tour. It might have been her second tour.
Yeah.
Like 300 seat room venues. And I was like really thrilled by that because we'd met once, like in 2012. And I think she might have just done an episode of 8 out of 10 Cats, but she wasn't who we know and love now.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was headlining the gig and I was like the 5 minute middle spot. But we just got on, had a great chat. But I couldn't believe, and I've not really seen her since, maybe once or twice. But then she invited me. And then, so when that happened, I was like, oh, okay, so this is regular work. Yeah. So then I was able to go to my boss and go, is there any way I could go part-time? They said yes. So I worked 3 days a week still in TV because I was scared.
Yeah.
And then I was on tour with Catherine. And then luckily, just being with such a up-and-coming legend opened doors for me, and then that led to getting a couple of TV opportunities, and then slowly and the rest, build.
And so when did you eventually jump off the production wagon? When were you brave enough to do that? Because I know that was always a big thing for me, like, oh, God, you know, it's all clashing a bit now. It's getting a bit harem-scare. I'm trying to organise everything.
Yeah.
When did you take the plunge?
So I think I actually went part-time maybe in 2015 and then I took the plunge in 2016.
Yeah. And how was that? Because I know I was terrified when I did it. I mean, I only did it a few years ago, so.
Oh, did you? Yeah. Well, I made sure I had savings. So I made sure I was in a position where I could do a year.
Yeah.
Yes, that was exactly the same.
And also, Catherine's tour at that point was a couple of months. So I was like, well, if it doesn't work.
You can go back.
I can go back because I've not been away for a lot. Like now it'd be a goddamn nightmare to try and get back in.
Yeah.
But at that time I was like, oh, I've not been away that long. Where it'd be strange.
And do you feel like, I know I had a sense of this, obviously, you know, when I was on the comedy circuit, sketch comedy circuit, just before you probably came around, actually, and we had to kind of drop off because we just couldn't sustain it. We were trying to do our normal jobs and gig, and you don't really get paid for sketch comedy. There's not really much money in gigging as a sketch comedian. Well, there certainly wasn't back then. But I always had a sense, had I not been working class or been in a better financial situation in my life, that my career might have happened a bit earlier. Like, things are happening for me now, but I'm 40. Well, I'm 42, actually. Keep rounding it down. but I do think, oh, fucking hell, like, you know, when I tell people, oh, yeah, I only got my first telly job when I was 32, people are like, what? I'm like, yeah, because it's the reality is when you are working class and you can't just drop everything, like, you know, like everything. We didn't have time to write. We were writing on the fucking bus on the way down there.
Well, I bet you couldn't go to auditions because of your job.
Well, no, sometimes you go, well, like, I just can't get out of work. So if I leave work now, they will fire me. And sorry, I have to pay my rent. So
that's what is. Yeah, I think that is the problem, actually, because it's like, because they try and say it's inclusive. We make it accessible to all, you know, the different ways they try and word it to make themselves feel better. But unless you're doing an audition, because don't forget, only after the pandemic did self-tapes really become a proper thing.
Yeah,
beforehand,
absolutely.
You had to go to the room that tended to be in London. And it was very rare that you were offered to self-tape.
And when you're in a normal job like you were at Sainsbury's or whatever, they don't get it. When you're asking for another day off,
yeah,
2 weeks later or three, they go, no, sorry, Laura.
And
you
nor
had a week
should
off,
they get
day
it.
Off the week. No. Yeah.
Like, they shouldn't have to. It's like, that's their business. But my thing was going, if you wanted to make this accessible, you should be casting people up until 8 p.m. at night because people could
agreed.
Come. But it was always like, we could do anywhere between 9 to 5. And it's like, good for you. But then this is why it was a lot. You always get a lot of Southerners putting on bad Northern accents.
Yeah, right.
But also, I think there's a whole thing. I don't know what it was like TV-wise, but theatre-wise, for sure, there was a huge distaste till very recently. I think the pandemic, honestly, of people even, what this means, admitting they had a job.
Yeah.
Like, you're supposed to just be available to theatre should it call and want you. And the idea that if you were serious, you wouldn't have a, you know, and it was really met with a huge amount of disdain. If somebody said they can't actually come in tomorrow at noon because they've got a shift at work, people go, like,
yeah, you don't want it enough.
Yeah, agents would say, if they were serious, you know, they would find a way to get there. And you're like, yeah, I don't know. It's just such a huge, there's so many obstacles, isn't there?
I went to America a few years ago and I was like, I'm just going to email a few people, like, see what happens. And it was like, I had meetings with, like, the head of Viacom over there and stuff like that, just because I emailed them. And over here, it'd be like, oh, Stephen looks very desperate. He's emailing directly. And over there, they were like, this is great. Do you know, when you move in here. And it's like,
you're allowed to be like that out there.
Yeah.
Not here, you're not.
Well, they encourage it a bit more. And it's even things like, you know, like when you look at people's, like, manage, like, people work with producers, work with the same producer on everything over there. Like, they take their producers everywhere and it's like a little gang. And over here, it's like that. I think that's why I feel like, oh, is it always back to square one?
Yeah, right. I mean, obviously, like, your tenacity has led you a long way and you've had, like, a huge amount of success. And so your life is probably, would you say your life is really different to the lot, how it was when you were growing up?
Not really. I mean, I tell you, I have more money, which is so nice because I can spoil my nephew. Like, I'm always like, he will not spoil. I want to raise a brat.
Yep.
And that is my prerogative. But I wouldn't say it's completely different. Like, I'm scared of having no money, so I live a very simple life. But what I will say is, like I say, all my friends that I genuinely enjoy social time with are the friends I've always had. Like, I am between Manchester and London, which is a privilege, but I've earned the money now where I can do that. So it's like, when I have time off, I'm going home because that's where I want to be with them all. But then at the same time, you know, last year I was at the Attitude Awards. I got to meet Cheryl Cole. Hello. I was dying. And I really feel like I have a good handle on it. What I'm not good about is, and I do feel lucky, but I also am aware I've worked hard for it. But sometimes I wish it's like, I just wish Britain could be a bit nicer with the way we do this industry.
Mm.
A bit more supportive. Tenacity, resilience, drive are dirty words. Ambition in this country is a dirty word.
Yeah, agree.
And I think that's wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that comes
to class. And that's like you said, it's the narrative we're being fed all the time to keep us in our place. And that's what happens when you're under Tory rule for so, so long, because they just do not respect the arts and they never will. Me and Hannah talk about what makes you working class. Like, I look at someone like Adele, right? And she's fucking millionaire, leads a very different life, lives out in LA. I would still look at her and go, well, there's a working class girl done good. Do you think class is where your roots are, where you what you feel connected to? Or do you think it's what you've got in front of you?
It's tricky because I always have a tricky thing being this, because I would say maybe on paper now, I'm middle class.
Yeah.
But the way your brain's wired and everything's happened, I still feel working class. And the point sometimes I make with it's going, if it all stopped, money goes down.
Mm.
And then I would be at zero. There's still no one to get me out of it.
Mm. Yes.
So I think that's what keeps you working class.
Yeah, right.
Having said that, I've got to a really good place with everything now where I feel like I love what I do, I'm happy what I'm doing, and I will always fight for what I do. But if the nonsense gets too much nonsense, like,
yes,
I don't want to change the world. Like, I can't go up against all these TV producers and the arts industry and the theatre producers and the directors and the casting director and change it all, because there's too many of us. So they'll just go, fuck you, Stephen, with this a load of gays we can get or whatever. But I'm not scared of quitting, moving back to Manchester, and getting a proper job.
That's incredibly powerful, though, isn't it? I think that from everything you've said, I thought one of your main powers is the reason we started doing this podcast is because Laura had read this thing, and it's this quote in some revolting magazine saying that being working class is something you want to escape from. And it like really pissed us off. And it was literally the reason we started the podcast. But I think what's so interesting from everything you've said today, there's nothing you want to escape from. Like, you actually even enjoyed your job at Sainsbury's. You had good mates. It wasn't hideous. It wasn't. So if it all goes to shit, then that wouldn't be a hideous place to go back to. And I think that's like a real source of power in a way.
Yeah. I always want to go home, and I don't understand people that don't. Obviously, have different upbringings that might not have been very kind, but it's like,
yeah.
I had a great upbringing, great family. Like I say, my friends are still my friends. I still go into Sainsbury's to this day and go and have Christmas lunch with the ones that are still there.
Like, I love that.
And
love
so it's
that.
Like, I like to go home. So I don't know why you wouldn't. And actually, over the pandemic, my local theatre reached out, because it's the last theatre in the area. And as with all these local theatres, they give all the funding to the big theatres.
Yeah.
The big city centre theatres and these local ones, because you're assuming people can afford to travel into Manchester city centre from Hyde. You're assuming people then can afford that class. And someone reached out to me from my local theatre, the Hyde Festival Theatre, and asked if I would consider coming on board as the president, just to use the bit of profile I do have to drive people that way. And I did, and during the pandemic, you know, I put on a Zoom charity gig. So I went to the theatre on my own, called in a few favours about borrowing cameras, and I did a gig on Zoom, but from the theatre, to pay for the theatre in that time. Like, I've done some of the celebrity quiz shows to raise money for the theatre, because here's the issue, and this is what I always say to people. To get into the arts, if you want to be an actor, dancer, whatever, you do have to go to these bonkers schools in the South.
Yeah.
Like, you just do where it's like really excessively priced, and I don't know how to change that.
No.
But what I can do is go, I've got a few contacts that I can drag to shows. And so then if they watch the shows, they might go, oh, they're good. Let me put them in touch with this casting director or this. Or, oh, I know an agent that they might be perfect for. Or da, 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 da. But at the same time, the other thing I think about community theatre and local theatre is, one, these beautiful buildings that should not be turned into flats. Their history. But also, that's where you go to decide if you love it and it is worth the investment. If you go and go, oh, I hate acting, it's not for me, or I don't like dancing or whatever, then you've probably wasted a tenner over all your life on going. But you could go, fall in love with it and go, I want to take it to that next level, so I know I'm going to have to invest and have the pain. And so I took over doing that. And that's the thing is good. I want to keep feeding it back. And I don't think a lot of people do that. I think a lot of people do forget where they've come from. And also, I think it's that thing of going, in the beginning, you're always fighting for yourself. And I think it's very easy to forget about everyone else because you're just going, I need to pay my rent. I need to do this. I need to do that.
Yeah.
I want to be famous. I want to be that. And the thing I keep thinking about lately is going, one day, all any of us are going to be is a Wikipedia page.
Yeah. If we're lucky.
Like, that's it.
If you're lucky.
We'll be dead. It will be dead.
Yeah.
Do you need to be dead with £1 million in the bank? I don't know if you do. And that's why I think sometimes the industry could be nicer.
Listen, we're coming to the end of your chat, unfortunately, because like I said, we could go on all night, couldn't we? We'd just like to finish up the show. Obviously, we've been celebrating you today. We like to finish up the show asking our guests if there's anyone they would like to sing, celebrate an unsung hero of theirs. Who would that be for you?
Ooh, yeah. Do you know who I think I would choose is my sister? And I'll tell you for why. Because she lives now on the house, on the road that we grew up on.
Right.
She works at the hairdressers around the corner. And she is so happy. And that is why I pick my sisters, because it's like that saying, she's happy with her lot.
Mm.
And I admire that, because I think I've had a bit of that. I'm a dreamer. I'm going to get out of this. Da, 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 da. And it's like, my sister is just so happy. She's grateful for what she's got. She's happy with God. And she's just making her way through this life. And she has, you know, she has a few holidays a year. She goes out with her mates. She's got a gorgeous baby, lovely husband. We all see each other. And I think there's a lot to be said for just being happy.
Because what constitutes success? That is successful right there. Being fucking happy, happy with your lot. Because that to me is having a successful life, is just being fucking happy.
Yeah. And it's like, and you get to experience things. And she travels and, you know, she has to save a bit harder. But, you know, they go on holiday and they have a nice time, and she's happy and she's content. And I don't think anyone, don't matter how much money you have, I don't think you could pay for that.
No. Absolutely. And what's her name?
Jessica.
So, Stephen, we are celebrating Jessica, your sister, as well as you today. Thank you so much for coming on. Honestly, it could have gone on and on and on.
I know, I really would as well. I mean, you set me off on the classism in this industry. Oh, I'd be here.
Maybe we'll have to come back and carry it on the next series or something.
I could do a movie on it, honestly.
Do it.
I know, feel you. Do it, yeah, do it. Oh, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, Han, how much fun was that?
Do you know what? That was like a night out.
I know, yes, I really want a night out with Stephen now. How do I get that? How do I get him to be my best friend?
Let's just go and sit outside his flat.
I know.
Let's not do that. Do you know what's so lovely? I think the reason it feels like a night out is just, you know, listen, you're my bestest mate, and we talk a lot. Like, our friends are so important to us, and I can't imagine, like, ever getting to a part of my life where I would sort of outgrow my friendships. And it's just so lovely to see someone doing as well as he is and just being so rooted to his, like, you know, gang of friends back home.
Yeah, and his gang of girls.
I just really resonate with that.
Yeah.
So strongly. It's lovely.
I know. And it was so, like, refreshing to hear him talk about his coming out. Well, lack of, like, not lack of, but he didn't feel the need to come out, that that he just never felt that need. And I just find that so refreshing, because it just shows you how how much support he had at home. And what was more interesting, that he hadn't really experienced any homophobia until he got to bloody London. I mean, Christ.
Oh, no, you don't often hear the story that way round.
No, not at all, not at all. It's often the other way round. But he's
debunking a few myths there. It's amazing.
Yeah, he's so brilliant. And I'd encourage anyone that ever gets a chance to go and see him live to do it, because he's an absolute scream. I went down a right old rabbit hole and went on YouTube, and I'm definitely going to get some tickets. You and me, actually, that's how I could be his best friend. I'll get us some tickets. I'll drop him a line. Stephen, remember us. And maybe...
And then there'll be a court case.
Oh, that's it for this week. But you can join us next week with a brand new guest. And remember, as always, guys, keep it classy.
The Proper Class podcast is produced by Michelle Farr-Scott for Rangaby Productions, edited by James Torrance, with music by Tommy Music.
Please don't forget to like and subscribe. Spread the word. Tell your friends, neighbours, whoever will listen. We've also got an Instagram page. Ooh, get us. And you can follow all the news and goss at The Proper Class Podcast. And if you haven't nodded off yet, we've also gone and got ourselves an official email. So do get in touch. The email is properclasspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, folks. And remember, keep it classy.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.